Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. 20 more minutes until we get to Amy Guth and the noon show. Right now, we're talking with Julie McFarlane. Oh, you know what? I didn't ask you, Elif, how I bring up Julie. Do I bring her up on Julia? Do I bring her up on the phone line? Yeah, I bring her up just like that.
Hey, hi, Matt.
Julia, how are you?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. Julia McFarlane is a producer and reporter for the BBC over in London, and she took some time out of her Saturday evening to spend with us. I was tweeting with you today. You went to a rugby match. Is that what you were doing?
I was not at the rugby match, but I was watching it with my friends. They were playing up in Scotland.
Okay.
So I'm a Scot removed from Scotland working in London, and I'm very pleased to say we won. I believe we thrashed Wales, so that was good.
Congratulations to you. So it's a good Saturday night for you.
Yes,
excellent.
I'm happy talking to you. I'd be sad and morose if we'd lost, so it's all good.
Well, the sad and morose is kind of what we're going to talk about, though, because there's interesting things going on here in America, especially as it relates to the media. And I wanted to chat with you because I follow you on Twitter and I see what you're tweeting all the time. And I'm always curious to see how we're being perceived overseas and in different parts of the world. And certainly with you working in the media and what's gone on with the administration this week. First, there was President Trump about a week or so ago tweeting out the fake news media failing New York Times, NBC News, ABC, CBS, CNN is not my enemy, is the enemy of the American people. And there was a lot of consternation about that. The administration tried to clarify, hey, he was saying the fake news, not everybody, but they did call out pretty much all of the mainstream news organizations in that. And then just yesterday, President Trump, speaking at the CPAC meeting, again vilified a lot of the news media, while his press secretary, Sean Spicer, had a gaggle in his office where they excluded the Times, BuzzFeed News, CNN, the LA Times, Political, the BBC, and the Huffington Post, among others. They only allowed a few people in, mostly with very conservative leanings or very friendly views of the administration. What are the thoughts of reporters overseas on what's going on over here?
Well, first of all, just in light of what may be seen as being a ban of certain media, Sean Spicer said, actually, no, we were expanding the pool. We had the pool reporters there, and we decided to expand it to some other outlets. Yes, you point out that many of them were conservative leaning, but there was a lot of alarm raised by that, by the fact that CNN, NY Times, also us as BBC, our America bureau editor Paul Danaher released a statement saying that the BBC was seeking clarification on why we were not allowed access, because the BBC has had a representative at all the White House briefings so far, and that's very much been the order of how things have happened. So whether the BBC gets some explanation of why our reporters weren't allowed into that briefing remains to be seen. But yeah, I mean, in talking about what Donald Trump has said about the media, how he's called a lot of media outlets fake news, and he's criticized a lot of coverage, I think, as you know, we are in the second month of Mr. Trump's presidency. I think we're getting used to sort of the language that he uses to talk to his people on Twitter, on TV interviews. And that holds a lot of appeal for his base back in the U.S. I would say that here in the U.K., he is a politician like no other. Well, I mean, he is a two-month-old politician, of course, because he has had no background in politics. And that held a lot of appeal for him, of course. And there is certainly an anti-establishment, anti-political elite mood here in the U.K. So I think it's difficult to sort of tar, you know, what does the U.K. think of Donald Trump? You know, a population of 70 million people, there will be, of course, people who think that he's great and that he represents the new age of what politics should be all about, drawing people from different backgrounds. That being said, there have been an awful lot of people taking to the streets in the UK, taking part in anti-Donald Trump protests. These protests, which have been held in dozens of locations throughout the UK since the election, since inauguration, since the enforcement of his so-called travel ban, his so-called Muslim ban. And there's been pretty big turnout for those. It was reported that there were around 40,000 people who marched down Whitehall here in London, which is where government is. And also in major towns such as Edinburgh and Glasgow and Manchester, there were a lot of people taking to the streets and protesting against In particular, the travel ban got a lot of negative sort of responses from people here in the UK.
Was that a stunning sight? I can't imagine a time here in America where we have protested against a leader of a foreign country. Now, the only thing I could think of is maybe down in Miami, protests against Castro in Cuba, because there's such a heavy population there. But I can't imagine anywhere else where we would even, now maybe that's our own feelings of superiority, that no other country matters as much as we do, so why would we bother protesting? But you know,
it was interesting. Yeah, no, it was, because there, you know, and it's difficult to gauge the national conversation using only social media, because that obviously a huge number of people throughout the country do not use social media. But it was interesting how affronted a lot of British people were with criticism for how the referendum went. And then, of course, we see lots of Brits out in the street protesting against Trump. So there is a little bit of, you know, going back and forth here. But it was interesting to see these protests repeated. They've taken place several times on several days, and it's usually very difficult to get the British people out to protest, really. There's got to be a pretty big, decent reason for people to get out in strong numbers. Now, the anti-Brexit protest that took part in London, and of course London voted in overwhelming numbers to stay in the EU, that numbered around 50,000 people. And the anti-Trump protest, the most biggest one recently, a few weeks ago, which was in response to the implementation of the travel ban. Now, obviously, they're all estimations, but that was reported to be around 40,000 strong. So that is quite interesting. But then, of course, you have London, which is a very liberal, it's a very metropolitan, cosmopolitan city, traditionally votes mostly Labour, which is the left-wing party here in the UK. And so there would be a fair amount of sort of solidarity with similar cities in the US, like New York and the state of California, where there were also a lot of protests. So a lot of the protests here were kind of showing solidarity with Americans who do not look favorably upon Donald Trump.
You know, there's a big, a lot of social media stories about the parliament, because Trump is supposed to visit there soon. What do you think is going to happen when he comes to town?
Well, I would imagine that there are several groups who are planning. They're aiming for, they say, they want to make the biggest protests in British history. But of course, there are anti-Brexit groups who are hoping to do the same thing before the March 31st deadline of triggering Article 50. We don't know when the state visit is going to take place, but there is also some. There's not a lot of clarity over whether the state visit of Donald Trump visiting the UK will even take place in London. There's been some talk of whether it might be rescheduled to a different city because of the strength of anti-Trump protests that are likely to take place in London. So, I mean, he'll obviously have to come to London if he's going to visit the Queen. We don't know whether that's going to happen yet. Buckingham Palace have said that they're, whether this happens or not, the invitation has been put forward. So, we also had that the petition that reached 1.8 million people who signed a petition calling for banning or cancelling the state visit, which was debated in Parliament. It took a few hours. A lot of MPs who felt very strongly about it took a lot of time to voice their thoughts. But there is a lot of healthy opposition in the UK.
And, you know, we were talking earlier in the show about Marine Le Pen and the French presidential election. Do you think that worldwide, as you're watching more on a worldwide scale elections and what's going on in different countries, we hear about a lot of resistance, of course, as you're talking about in the UK to things like Trump. But do you think that we're seeing more and more politics turn towards a bit more of a nationalism right now?
I think that's certainly in the case in the EU. And there's a number of different reasons, and a lot of academics will have different ideas of why. But when you have a continental sort of framework, that in order for it to work, it has to kind of stifle down individual the individual sense of nationalism, and the rise of nationalism and the fringe groups who have sort of benefited from that has kind of been as a result of having their own nationalism stifled in the face of a new European identity. So I think that my own personal opinion is that I think that's why we're seeing a lot of fringe parties, parties like the Front National of Marine Le Pen, Britain's UKIP, Alternative for Deutschland in Germany. I think that's why we've seen sort of the rise of those. Also building on a lot of Eurosceptic concerns of people who feel a loss of control. And I think, you know, that loss of control and being swallowed up by greater forces around you in terms of globalization, I think that is something that I think resonated a lot with a lot of Trump voters who feel that they have been left behind with globalization. We watched a lot of what happened with the Rust Belts in the US, and a lot of frustrated voices being left behind. I think there are lots of very similar veins to be found in Europe.
You hear a lot of the consternation with the new administration, among many things, is the contacts with Russia. Who knew what, when, what was going on? How nefarious is it? Russia has become a big issue here in the U.S. Are you guys thinking about Russia much at all there in Europe, or are there bigger fish to fry?
No. It is definitely something that's on our radar as a emboldened Russia makes more of a move on the frontiers of Europe, and we saw what happened with the annexation of Crimea, and we see frequent Russian sort of aggressive military posturing, shall we say, with, you know, Russian Navy ships and planes doing frequent sorties or, you know, moving close to European territorial waters. That's been the case for a while. There's also Russia's role in the Syrian crisis as well, and so there's a lot of grappling of whether or how best we should engage or stand up to Russia. So, of course, you know, with the new administration, will that lead to better, more positive relations with Russia? Will Russia be more willing to cooperate and not be aggressive and hostile to the rest of Europe and the wide international community? Donald Trump, if he is able to build on his friendship with Vladimir Putin, would be in a really strong position to do that. It's out of our hands here in the UK, but it is something that from where we sit, a lot of people will be watching very anxiously. And a lot of people will be going on with their day-to-day business and who will think that our relations with Russia are, you know, a matter for, you know, for the politicians, and whether it affects a lot of people's day-to-day working lives is something that it depends on who you speak to, whether you talk to voters or whether you talk to politicians and the media, who, of course, we're very interested in what happens in the months and years to come.
Yeah, well, we've got a very interesting 4 years ahead of us, Julia. There's no doubt about that, at least over here.
Absolutely.
Julia McFarlane is a producer and reporter for the BBC Overseas. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us. I really appreciate it. I hope we can talk again.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Matt.
We'll talk to you again. Julia McFarlane, follow her on Twitter. Very good follow on Twitter to see what's going on around the world at Julia McFarlane, MacFarlana, at Julia McFarlane. We'll talk to her again on the Overnight Show. Amy Guth with the Noon Business Hour coming up next on 720 WGN.